This is Roland Washington from justicefound.org, and this is podcast number 3 in regards to the SF Exodus, where in 1858, 90-something percent of the black population of California, and literally the whole black population of San Francisco, left and migrated to Canada based on the type of treatment they were receiving at the time. So we're over here at USF, and I have with me Professor Rhonda McGee and a couple of my brothers and sisters that are law students here. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. My name is Nicole Bryson. I am a native of the Bay Area and a second-year law student here at USF.
Hi, my name is Chester McGinsey III. I am a JD MBA student, and I'm in my last year.
All right, so, and I'm Professor Rhonda McGee, and we just want to continue the conversation that we've begun on this really fascinating aspect of San Francisco history, and certainly California history, and therefore the history of the United States. We're talking about, of course, the what we're calling the Exodus of 1858, during which hundreds of blacks migrated from California to Victoria, colony of Victoria, of British Columbia. And we've talked a little bit about the circumstances that gave rise to that migration, why hundreds of black settlers who had come to the Bay Area felt compelled to leave this new territory, this land of freedom, this place where to which many people from all over the country had come seeking opportunity. Why it was that blacks felt compelled to leave. And some of those things had to do with, again, the passage of laws that were, in fact, discriminatory, that were, in fact, oppressive, and that contributed to an atmosphere of unwelcome for blacks in this area, including the 1852 Fugitive Slave Act passed by the California legislature, which stated that in no trial or hearing under the act shall the testimony of such alleged fugitives, meaning blacks, free blacks, be admitted in evidence. And that law in and of itself was instrumental in that it made clear that here in California, if a black person had established himself as a free person and was nevertheless challenged or claimed to be a slave, that testimony or claim made by a white person could not be met with testimony in one's own defense by a black person. A black person could not meet the claim of a white that he or she was not a slave with their own testimony because the legislature had barred that testimony in court. And there were other ways that the law actually contributed to a climate of fear, a climate of oppression that led to folks wanting to leave. And it's interesting that this was not isolated to California, although we're here to commemorate the exodus from San Francisco that happened 150 years ago this April in 1858. But during the 1850s, following certainly the Dred Scott decision that came down in 1857, in which the United States Supreme Court made clear that not even free blacks had any rights that the white man was bound to respect, black people all over the country began to really get serious about finding someplace else to go. And so this is an important aspect, again, of not only Bay Area history, but it's important not only to those of us who live here generally, but it's of particular importance, I think, to law students. You study Dred Scott. We study, as a part of constitutional law, the Dred Scott opinion is an important one for helping set up discussions about states versus federal rights, and a host of issues that led up to the constitutional challenges that were in some measure solved by the Civil War. Rarely, if ever, do we talk about the impact of the Dred Scott opinion on the black people in this country at the time. And so it's really, really, I think, important for us in a law school setting where we are here at the University of San Francisco today to have an opportunity to reflect on the exodus from the standpoint of it being a manifestation of a reaction to unjust legal decisions. And I'm here and happy to answer any particular questions that any of my two very strong students here have with regard to this issue as well.
Okay, so you kind of spoke to why you thought it was important for us to highlight this piece of San Francisco and California history and how it relates to the broader history of the United States as a whole. And you mentioned some of the issues that led to the exodus of 1858. Can you please elaborate on how you feel that those same issues still exist within the community today and have contributed to the out-migration of the black population in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a very, very good question. I think there are a number of what you might see as contemporary implications of this history. Number one, I think first and foremost for me, as a person who's been living here in the Bay Area for 15 years now, I came here from Virginia. You know, a person coming to this area, one of the things that strikes a black person coming to this area from a place like Virginia is there is a discrepancy in terms of the extent to which black history is a familiar presence in daily life, and not just a contemporary sort of history of the last 20 or 30 years, but history of long standing. When you're in Virginia, you've got a lot of venerable institutions that remind you of slavery era and post-slavery era contributions of blacks to that region, and therefore to our nation's establishment. Here in California, it's not as present. And in fact, as a result of these efforts by the African American Historical Society to bring this issue to the fore, and relatedly their efforts last year, to which I contributed in some small part, to bring the slavery disclosure ordinance forward, we are learning more about that history. And I talk to people about this incident, and in those conversations I hear, I had no idea that there were black settlers. I had no idea that there were people here before the Civil War, black people in significant numbers. So I think in the larger sense, it's important for us who live here today, just as it's important to us as a country to know our history, to know how it was that this American experiment began, and all of the different struggles we've as a people gone through to make it to make it what it is today, and to kind of keep us on track and trying to make it all that it can be. Knowing our history is important. Knowing our history is important for grounding us, for giving us a sense of our contributions in the past, and to helping us have a strong footing in terms of making claims, laying claims for the future. Laying claims that tie us in to, again, not just a contemporary ways in which we've contributed to this community, but ways in which we've always contributed. And so I think the fact that we don't know this history very well, not just black Californians, not just black San Franciscans, but San Franciscans generally, Californians generally, people in the country generally don't know much at all about the history of blacks in the West. I think it just contributes to an undervaluation of the value and contributions of blacks to our society that is part and parcel, I think, with the contemporary challenges facing both the community and those challenges that the community faces in interacting with those who are not black in helping in the kinds of coalition building that's necessarily important when you're a minority group to help move you forward. Mm-hmm. So we need this history to kind of give us a better context for tackling the problems that we're seeing today. I'm curious what some of your thoughts are in terms of how you think this history might be relevant, might be of value to students who are in your position today. How might it matter?
I would say this sort of runs in the line of the history that we've seen come out in regards to Tulsa, in regards to other black communities that have been thriving, that have been extraordinarily successful, that were in the 1920s or the 1900s, even in the late 1800s, but that were either riots where whites came in and raided the town and killed a lot of people in the town, and so people dispersed, or you see other incidents where African Americans try to achieve, but like in San Francisco, they're deprived of their liberty and right to protect their property in court. And so I think that what it does is it puts our history in context, in the context that we need it, because right now we have a misrepresentation of who we are and what our achievements have been. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, African Americans, oh, they, you know, they were shiftless, they were lazy. Those are the type of stereotypes that have been perpetuated, and they've sort of been ingrained in our society in a lot of different ways. But I think that the importance of understanding this history is to be able to understand who we are as a people, because you need to know who you are to be able to move you forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is really important, especially coming out of San Francisco, because you don't have the history that you have, let's say, in the South mm-hmm. or on the East Coast, to really understand that blacks here on the West Coast, for like myself, who's a native Californian, mm-hmm. To be able to say we were here, we contributed, we helped to found this state, and, you know, that we have a history so that we can take that history and move forward with it. So, I mean, that's very encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to echo some of what Chester said and also what some of what Professor McGee said, I definitely think that there is a sense of relevancy in that the same issues that were driving the community back then are the same issues that drive the community today. So the same issues of housing and home ownership, of quality education, of underemployment and economics, also of social quality and life issues, those are the same concerns that, you know, were driving the community in 1858 to go to Canada to pursue the economic opportunity of the gold rush, where they were able to participate in the electoral process and sit as jurors. They enjoyed full citizenship rights, as opposed to in California, where we had the Fugitive Slave Act. We had students not being able to go to school, and all of those kinds of things, and just a sense of you know, African Americans not belonging, not being a part of this society, though we all know it, how strongly we've contributed to this world throughout its history. So I definitely think that it's relevant, and I also think that it's important that we highlight things that are not always talked about, so things that not everyone knows about, but that are still significant. And I think that this is definitely significant to show that, you know, the West was no different than the South. You know, America was America. And ultimately, the enforcement was everywhere. And so this just kind of shows that, you know, it happened in California too.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I would piggyback and say also to put in the context in law school, I think it's important to understand that the reason we had to leave is because the law didn't protect us. Mm-hmm. The Constitution didn't protect us. You know, the state law didn't protect us. State Constitution, nothing. And so, I mean, understanding our role as lawyers, as the gatekeepers, if you will, of the law, I mean, we have a duty and a responsibility to make sure that those type of things don't happen. Mm-hmm. And then, and to the extent that, actually, in fact, the law does protect us, and the mm-hmm. law is applied equally. I think mm-hmm. that puts a lot of our studying, because we're here in the classroom all day long, but it puts it into context in a real way, to say that, you know, as an attorney, you know, no matter what practice you go into, to make sure that you're cognizant mm-hmm. of the fact that, you know, you're here and who you're representing, and you're not just here for yourself.
Right.
So, that's true.
And definitely to appreciate the opportunity, to participate in this process and to recognize how powerful it is. Mm-hmm. It's really a blessing mm-hmm. to be a part of it.
Right. You know, and you guys both put me to thinking about ways in which this is important, not only to us here, not only to blacks in California and blacks in law school here, lawyers in training, but this is about a broader educational endeavor in as much as, again, the lessons that we're learning and the lessons that we've talked about as being important to us here, you know, they're important to all of us. What we're learning here, it helps flesh out some of the gaps in a larger picture about who we have been as a country, who we have been as a community here on the West Coast. We know certain aspects of that story. We know certain aspects of the way in which this part of the country was first peopled by Native Americans who were affiliated with Mexico, and then ultimately was made a territory, and then finally a U.S. state. We know about, for example, jumping forward a bit, the Chinese exclusionary movement. We know about some of the incidents that happened, discriminatory treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II. But we don't know very much about this piece of it, which actually is a precursor to much of that history, right? There was a racialized exclusionary movement against black people that presaged prefigured, if you will, the movement against Chinese Americans that later came, the movement against Japanese Americans that later came. These things don't spring up in a vacuum. And they have antecedents, and this is an important, piece of that puzzle, an important chapter in our history that helps us better understand how it came to be, that we were later writing laws to exclude Chinese and to deny Japanese Americans ownership land, ownership rights in land, and so on and so forth. It's not a history that we're particularly proud of, but it's a history that's important. It's a history that maybe for that very reason we need to study. Mm-hmm. Because, and again, bringing it forward to today, one of the objectives I carry with me as I teach law is that of heightening our capacity as contemporary practitioners and students of law to think critically about what the law is doing right now. Mm-hmm. That from the, you know, from the perspective of a history of you know, 100 years from now, we'll look back on and shake our heads and say, how could we have? Mm-hmm. All right. And one of the ways you heighten people's capacity to sort of critically evaluate the law now is by, I think, really examining the past and saying, oh yeah, look at the things that we did 100 years ago that the society tolerated, and how now we realize those, and examine how we came to realize those things were fundamentally unfair. The more we study our history with that kind of question in mind, the better able we are to jump in sooner, I think, when we see things going off track today, to point out ways in which the law today is having these kinds of discriminatory effects. And there are many ways that the law today continues to reflect patterns of unequal treatment. We know it in a lot of areas that have a disproportionate impact on the black community. And for example, the substance and application of criminal law disproportionately to blacks nationally and in the Bay Area is just one example. If you look outside of our community, the law around immigration, which is another area that I study and teach, we know that it's disproportionately singling out Latino, brown, and other people of color in ways that I think we'll look back on and say, hey, this was fundamentally unfair. So I think this is important. It can play an important role in a larger educational project of mine, which is about just heightening our capacity to think with a critical view about current policies and ask, in what ways are they furthering patterns of discrimination and patterns of oppression that we've seen before?
Yeah, and I would also say that I think this is important in terms of history because we're talking about, in terms of law students and graduate students, but I would say this is even important for younger children. Not only necessarily to see the positive influence that their ancestors had so long ago, but also to understand their responsibility in going to school and doing the best that they can to study and to get out there and to be that representation now. Because, like I said before, nobody's going to protect all of our rights. You know, you have to demand it. You have to have the ability to go out there and do it. And but for the Charles Houstons or the Thurgood Marshalls, we wouldn't have many of the things that we had today. And so for the generation that's coming up, there's always going to be a fight. I mean, whether it's to extend your rights or to make sure you're maintaining and protecting your rights. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something important that parents need to, you know, talk to their kids about. And when discussing these type of things, it's like, look at these people, look what they achieved, look what they did, but then look how easy they got taken away. Mm-hmm. And if you're not studying, if you're slacking off in class because you don't want to read a book, if you don't want to read, how are you going to read the law? Mm-hmm. How are you going to know your rights? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's why education is so important. I mean, just making sure that, you know, even if your kids aren't getting it in school, they're getting it at home. Mm-hmm. Because you got to make sure that you're preparing people to be that next generation to carry the torch.
I think it's definitely especially critical right now for our youth, given the situation that many of our youth are in, and not recognizing the fight that generations ago went through to give you the opportunity to sit in the classroom that you don't want to go to. You know what I mean? So I think that right now is definitely the time that, you know, things like this should be brought to the forefront so that young people can see that is still alive, and that ultimately I think you gave a different perspective being not from here, you know, so someone coming from Virginia coming here has a different perspective than someone who's actually lived here their whole time, and what a contrast it is for you. And I think that, you know, California and definitely our youth are in this mindset of that's over, and it's not over, you know, and just like he said, there will always be a fight, whether it's just to maintain, that's a fight. And so I think that we need to definitely keep these kinds of issues in the forefront to make sure that, you know, young people who haven't had to experience, you know, the dog fights, the lynching and the things like that, that they are aware that this history, you know, did exist, and that even in those times we stood above that. And so ultimately we expect of you that you would, you know, do the same and honor our forefathers in that respect.
I would also say that this, I see the studying of the Exodus in a way also that brings about unity. Barack Obama just recently gave a speech discussing race, and I think that in his discussion it was a very raw and real discussion that talked about feelings in America. And I think that by learning more about this history, the good and the bad of it, because I mean quite frankly I think that when you look at African American history, you see atrocious treatment of African Americans here in the States, but there are pockets and clusters of people who helped out the cause. I mean, you look at the Civil Rights Movement, there are a lot of whites who are riding on the buses on the Freedom Rides also. And I think that that type of understanding, that it's not just about blacks fighting for rights, we're Americans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing. It's we're Americans. We helped found the United States. We helped, you know, we were here to help found California. You know, it's we achieve and we do better, society does better. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the key. That's what we have to, you know, do and look at when we're moving forward, is really thinking about bringing unity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, yeah, you got to deal with the dirt, you know, and I think that this is part of it. You're dealing with the dirt, but I think that, you know, through looking at this stuff, hopefully it brings about that change in the community, and hopefully it brings about that change in San Francisco. San Francisco is a wonderfully diverse place, but right now one of the problems is we're losing some of that diversity. And I think that the dialogue needs to go, you know, back to the idea that, you know, we're dealing with an exodus that happened oh so long ago, but yet right now we're dealing with an mm-hmm. exodus.
Yes.
So, you know, it kind of puts everything in the historical context to look at, you know, we did bad, we left. Blacks actually finally came back, started coming back to San Francisco, lived in San Francisco, you know, used to actually live around here in the neighborhood. You know, now, you know, where are we at? So, I mean, I think it's something to talk about, like you said, in the larger context moving forward, is to really understand and put in perspective how everything sort of works together.
Okay. And as a person who lives here in the city now and hope to live here for years to come, you know, I really appreciate the fact that the Historical Society, and it sounds like the City and County of San Francisco are behind this as well, the fact that we are taking time to commemorate this and reflect on its value.
As somebody that's born and raised in San Francisco and born and raised in this neighborhood, my thing is that it feels like it's the same dynamic where you're being pushed, and your reality could be that rooted in history, you can say within yourself that we fought every war. I mean, my father was in Vietnam and Korea. My sister's a major in the military and has gone to Iraq twice. But we don't get anything for what my family has gone through. My grandfather fought in the segregated war, so you couldn't be a soldier. So he was a merchant marine who had to go out there on the front lines before the whites were allowed to see action. And so there's certain points where consciously, how do you, you know, we're talking about, for some of us, the law is one of the only things that now consciously we can say, let's go to this next step, because we've tried coercion, we've tried the Mau Mau tactics, we had our Black Power time, we've had the capitulation time when the NAACP felt it was easier to try to go through the legal route than the challenge because of the Red Scare. And so now with you guys, something has to happen, but what is the next step?
I personally, I think the next step is the kind of thing we're doing right now. making community. I mean, I see this as a way of making community. It's a way, first of all, bringing us four people in a room in a way that we might not ever have gotten in a room together. And those folks who with whom we are having this kind of virtual conversation by virtue of the fact that this is not a new podcast, we are, I think, together laying a foundation for a remaking of community that I think has to be the first step of whatever we do next. We have to continue to forge and strengthen the bonds that we do have between us, reconnect the dots, and share our experiences such that we know that we're in the same boat together, and then take this kind of community building effort to the larger community. We're not alone in this. I mean, it is true that African Americans are disproportionately leaving, and we know that the African American Outmigration Task Force, on which I served, laid out, and you can check that out on the web as well, detailed the evidence that, we have lost thousands of people in a generation, and the percentage has gone from something like 30% African-American to now down to, I believe, 6% or so. Yep. So it's appalling, just the precipitous decline in numbers in the contemporary black community seen over the last generation. But again, we are still here. We are, many of us are actually, doing well, thriving. Not all of us are, though. And yet, I do think it's important for us to come together again, link our fates together in a way that they have always been, we just aren't aware. Our fates are linked. And to kind of become more aware of that and then participate in relinking up with the other groups who are also suffering in this society right now. Suffering in San Francisco, many people of color and many poor whites or working class whites. Again, we are not absolutely alone in this, and I do think the next step will be about forging community and forging communities of interest, not simply of color, mm-hmm. but communities of interest that will enable us to do the kind of work that we need to do as a community to sort of make these issues ones that are taken seriously on the political scene. That's just some of my thoughts.
Oh, I mean, I would just say that in terms of looking at the answer, I think that, like you said, the progression has sort of been, we moved from, you can say the Mau Mau tactics and then moving toward, going to the courts and doing things. I think that, we live in a capitalistic society. And so in a lot of ways, it's a blessing and a curse because society runs off of money, but at the same time, you know what you're working with. And I think that, like Professor McGee said, coming together as a community is important, but it's important and it's essential to also pool assets. I mean, creating wealth in the community is fundamental. Being able to keep the dollars in the community, being able to bring businesses in those communities and provide jobs in those communities, I think is important for a lot of people. Because I think when you look at rising housing prices, a lot of people want to own homes. I mean, it's economical. And I think that in order to create a community where people can stay and people want to stay, you have to create the opportunities. And I think that moving forward, that's what we're really going to be focused on, is trying to create those opportunities and trying to create that community so San Francisco can have a thriving African-American population again.
But from the next generation perspective, you have to be the buttress, because you stated yourself in Tulsa and all these other places where blacks had their own communities, had their own businesses, had their own thriving stuff. It was taken away from them. Same thing in San Francisco. I believe the Bayview Bank was originally a black bank that was over on Divisadero, and there was two branches, but they have it out here like blacks never had anything. They take the assets away. Now, there's these dynamics that still to this day we are being robbed, for lack of a better word, or you got this so-called predatory lending thing and on, so there's still dynamics, the FHA, on, and I see that maybe you as the next generation can maybe get in there and, like I said, be a buttress to stop this. Back in the day, nobody could stop redlining. That was just a thing that the government sanctioned and on. But if people like you are in those key positions, maybe...
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it's about. And I think it's also about education. I think that one of the things, like you said before, one of the things you was pointing to, they sold the house. And so one of the things that when you're talking about the community, it's about building, but it's also about maintaining that property. Because, I mean, if you look at a lot of other cultures, when they create that wealth stays in that community. And you're thinking about selling a home, well, who are you selling it to and why are you selling it? You know, maybe that needs to be a rental property. Mm-hmm. You know, those type of things that you got, we need to educate our community around on how to create and maintain those things that are permanent fixtures in the community. And like you said, yeah, having people in positions where they can, like I said, be the vanguards, be those gatekeepers to make sure that we are being protected mm-hmm. under the law. I mean, and that's, right. I mean, I think so. It's all, I think, coming full right. circle, like you said.
It's got to work on a lot of fronts, it sounds like. I mean, we're talking about community building. We're talking about focusing on education. We're talking about education broadly, not just in the classroom, but economic and financial education. And I'm thinking of education about, again, other organizations that are out there that are available to assist. There's a greenlining institute, for example, to combat, for example, the redlining problem. It's out there. I've had the pleasure of educating students who now work for greenlining, a couple of Asian American students of mine, who you know have participated in conversations like this about the impact of race generally and are now doing that work. They're here. They're making a difference. So our community needs to know more about the resources both within and outside of the community to assist us. And again, be mindful of the need now to work with others, right? We've got to build our community inside and build up these resources in a way that Chester laid out. I completely agree. But at the same time, we've got to learn to work with those resources that are out there to help us. And there are. And to participate in giving back on a larger scale, not just to our community, which is important, but giving back to the... I mean, again, this entire American experiment owes so much of its success with regard to the question of what freedom means, what equality means, you know, what our aspirations as a diverse community should look like, to the work that Black and other people of color have done to kind of keep this conversation going over the last 200 plus years. In other words, we have always been contributing to a larger dialogue about, you know, where we should be going as a country. And I think that this kind of dilemma that we face as a Black community today gives us another opportunity to both shore up our own community, but also do it in a way that I think will contribute to, again, the way Barack is doing on the larger scheme. He's taking from the Black experience and teaching the world. Mm-hmm. And there are ways that we can continue to do that, even using this situation that we find ourselves in, of being a bit of a beleaguered Black community in San Francisco. We're not the only beleaguered community, and we can teach as we grow through this challenge as well. Well, if one thing I would like to say in closing, because I know we need to wrap up. Again, I appreciate all of your thoughts and your brilliance on this today. To me, fundamentally, you know, there is a lot of work that each of us can do. And if I can say anything in closing that I hope will inspire people, is that I'm hoping everyone will think about what he or she, what you can do. To contribute to a rebirth of the Black community sort of in a way that will honor the experience of our Black settlers whose history has gone so long untold. What can we do today, starting right now? What can each individual within the hearing of this podcast take on as their particular self-commitment and then commitment to the community and commitment to the larger community, the communities of interest we've been talking about, to further the objective of bringing our community into the light and keeping us moving forward, going forward in the next generation? What can you do?
Well, for starters, I can definitely, I think that this whole experience has made me more appreciative of my position as a law student, as a member of the community, in that I recognize the amount of choices that I have. So with that recognition, I think that it's my duty to impart that on fellow members of the community. So in participating in events like the commemoration of this exodus and other cultural activities that go on within the city, is how I plan to lend my support.
And I would say that ditto to that, and also just to be more involved and more plugged into the community. I think that sometimes as graduate students, we get mm-hmm. locked in the library mm-hmm. and we don't necessarily appreciate everything that's going on around us. So I think for me specifically, and I'd also reach out to other people around school, I'm going to get in their ear, but, you know, to encourage them to get more involved.
Thank you.